Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Radiolab is supported by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and can be more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Visit betterhelp.com/radiolab today to get 10% off your first month.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hello, I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krilwich.
And this is Radiolab.
Our topic today is, what is our topic today,
Robert? Our topic today is making life that isn't there before you arrived in the room.
Okay. Life not as we know it,
yes.
But as we might invent it or make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about life, you and I. Okay, mm-hmm. So when you look around in the world at living things, and I say, look, Jad, there's a cat, and next to that is a dog, mm-hmm. and that's a tree. And you notice that those things, of course, are different.
Yes.
And later when we go to school, we learn about phylums and categories like kingdoms and stuff. So we learn mm-hmm. about the nature of those differences. And then you're taught about struggle and competition,
Darwin
and species and
fittest,
all that.
And yeah.
There is a new theory that's being talked about that turns all of that on its head. I heard it first from this guy.
I'm Steve Strogatz. I'm an applied mathematician at Cornell.
And the story he told me, which is based on analysis of DNA in very tiny organisms,
microbes,
is that once upon a time, he says, life began with a very primitive, very simple collection of cells. And these cells, said Steve, these cells like to share.
It appears that when you go back far enough, there's a kind of rampant sharing of molecules. It's a kind of orgy in which there are no well-defined species or organisms, and I can give you my genes and you can pass. We're a commune. It was a commune.
What does that mean? It was a commune.
What do you mean? What does it mean?
I know what it means in the 60s free and love sense, but what does it really mean?
What cells are exchanging is chemicals. Chemicals that give them talents and traits, genes. Here's what happens. I did this with Steve. In our ancient puddle, I mean, Darwin thought that life might have begun in a warm puddle. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you and I are both cells.
Okay.
So once upon a time, there was you in a puddle, and I'm in the same puddle as you.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a little colder in the puddle, so we should all get sick. But you don't get sick. You have some kind of accidental talent. You can handle cold water. I'm shivering. Describe again what happens at this point in the glorious old days.
Well, my membrane, that is, I'm a cell, I've got a membrane, I've got my outer layer, maybe a little bit porous, and maybe, whoops, some of my genes just leaked out. Okay, we're not talking sophisticated organisms.
Right.
And maybe you're porous too, and oh, whoa, you just absorbed some of those genes.
So now we both have this.
We both got it.
You both got it. And if I've got this gene now, I can survive cold water because it's part of me. And if I bump into you, now it's part of you. So now this Steve gene has become a Robert gene, which has then become a Jad gene, and we're doing this over and over and over. And we're getting really communal.
It sounds so friendly.
No, actually, don't think of cells like people. Shut up! All these exchanges, this gene swapping, was not intentional.
It's not purposeful sharing.
That's Nigel Goldenfeld.
I'm a theoretical physicist at the University of Illinois.
And he and his colleague Carl Woese did the science that led to some of these kind of groovy ideas.
It's not me sort of saying, hey, I'm going to just help out my buddy over there. Here's a couple of genes that I think you'll find handy. It's not something like that.
Even still, if we're swapping genes so much and, you know, you're giving me yours and I'm giving me mine, what does it actually mean to be me.
Yeah.
If so much of me is spread around.
Well, it would be very weird. Imagine a world in which for a while I have your nose. God forbid. And then I get my nose back. You'd have Steve's hair. Then Steve would get my ear. Then he would get your nose.
Once you start having a lot of exchange.
I'll take your chin.
Okay. You can have my allergies.
Then you start even asking, what does it mean to be a species?
You can have my love affair with doubt.
You may not even be able to talk about individuals.
Yeah, if the mixing is good enough, we're all kind of indistinguishable. So identity would be very strange in this ancient world.
A lot of the concepts that we take for granted in biology become more and more nebulous as you get further and further back to the root of the origin of life.
Take, for instance, Charles Darwin. What Nigel's really saying is that for the first billion years of life...
With a B.
Everything that Darwin teaches, all that stuff hasn't happened. There are no borders, no individuals, there's no species.
That is, Darwinism, evolution as we now understand it, that's an interlude. In the real story of life, it's only what's happening now.
What you got back at the very beginning was a whole bunch of cells swapping genes, swapping advantages, swapping disadvantages, and it's kind of a wild time.
A tremendous explosion of diversity in a way that life has not seen since then.
Until... one dark and terrible day, 3 billion years ago. As interpreted by Freeman Dyson,
the
famous physicist, and delivered here now by our friend the mathematician Steve Strogatz. Here's Steve.
One evil day, a bacterium anticipating Bill Gates by 3 billion years refused to share. The first bad guy is this cellular Bill Gates who decides that I've got an innovation that I don't feel like sharing. Or possibly I found a way to keep my membrane from leaking. That is, I'm not going to be a sharing soul anymore.
And why? I mean, what made that one little cell decide to stop sharing?
That's a good question. We don't really know.
But what we do know...
This was maybe the most dramatic moment in the history of life on Earth. This transition from the age of, well, if you want to call it the age of sharing, to the age of selfishness.
And gradually, once one creature stopped sharing, pretty soon the others followed, and more did the same thing. And now, for the first time in the history of life, finally we get Darwin. Now we get species. Now we see differences.
Yes, it's the age of identity, of individualism. It's also the age of stasis.
Things change, but they change much more slowly.
And any great thing, you know, like you are a bat and you figured out sonar. I don't have sonar. I can't get sonar. Be nice to have sonar, or like you're in a little electric fish that lives in the muddy waters of the Amazon. You don't care it's totally dark. You can see because you can see with electricity. I can't see with electricity. If I'm in the dark, I'm bumping my head.
Okay, so here's where we end up. Chapter one. A great orgy of gene swapping. Chapter two.
Dude.
The orgy ends. We pass genes now not to other guys, not randomly, but just to our own children. And finally, here comes...
chapter three.
As proposed by Freeman Dyson, the physicist.
Freeman Dyson.
After 3 billion years of life slowly evolving through random mutations, through bumps in the night, one species, Jad, human beings, you... and me, we have become so smart, some of us, so technologically advanced that we can swap genes. We now decide who gets what genes. And thanks to us, evolution as Darwin described it is beginning to end. And now we welcome evolution as described by Freeman Dyson to the graduating class at the University of Michigan.
I see a bright future for the biotech industry, becoming small and domesticated rather than big and centralized.
Freeman thinks that in the future everybody, and he means everybody, they will all be creating new life forms. And why? Because they can.
There will be do-it-yourself kits for gardeners who will use genetic engineering to breed new varieties of roses and orchids. Kits for lovers of pigeons and parrots and lizards and snakes to breed new varieties of pets. Genetic engineering, once it gets into the hands of housewives and children, will give us an explosion of diversity of new living creatures. The final step in the domestication of biotechnology will be biotech games, designed like computer games for children down to kindergarten age, but played with real eggs and seeds rather than with images on a screen. Playing such games, kids will acquire an intimate feeling for the organisms that they're growing. The winner could be the kid whose seed grows the prickliest cactus, or the kid whose egg hatches the cutest dinosaur.
So there's your future. I would like to make it your future for the moment rather than my own.
But it doesn't sound that bad. I mean, maybe a little sci-fi?
Well, actually, here's the interesting thing is that what he's describing has already begun. There are kids doing this right now or something very close to it. How old were you when you did this?
I guess I was 20. I'm 21 right now.
Okay. Who are you? What's your name and what do you do?
I'm Stephen Payne. I'm a senior in biological engineering at MIT.
Now, here's the thing about Stephen. He, like most kids who are in the sciences in college, had to spend hours and hours and hours in the lab waiting for E. coli to slowly grow in a Petri dish.
E. coli, like the stuff that gives you food poisoning?
Well, yeah. It's the stuff. It's common bacteria and it lives naturally in your gut. And it's, by the way, a big laboratory favorite. And the problem is, says Reshma Sethi, who's a grad student at MIT, is E. coli in the raw?
Actually smell really bad.
What does it smell like?
It actually kind of smells, I guess, maybe like poo. I don't know. What do you think it smells like?
Feces.
Anyway, Stephen and his friends got it into their heads that they could make
E. coli that smell,
you know, nicer.
Yep, nicer smelling.
Like cinnamon or cherry.
Or like minty fresh.
We ended up deciding on wintergreen.
Wintergreen?
Like, you got something against wintergreen?
I mean, no.
In the real world, who has wintergreen?
It's the petunia plant.
Petunias have wintergreen? I have no idea.
Yeah. A lot of folks study why plants make nice smells. So why do roses smell nice? Why do petunias smell nice? So what we did was we requested from one of these folks, Natalia Dudareva from Purdue University, we asked her to send us a sample of one of the genes she had studied that produces this wintergreen smell.
She mailed it.
Through the mail.
They opened it up.
We took it.
Took it out.
What were you taking out? A little bit of gunk?
It's actually living cells, living dried cells.
Yeah, we pulled out the DNA, put it into a new cell.
And once the new DNA had done its thing, Stephen called everybody into the lab.
And we all came over and we're like, whoa, these, you know, this E. coli culture actually does smell like mint.
And we were like, yay.
That's crazy.
Yay.
So instead of smelling poo all day, they get to smell wintergreen.
Well, actually, there was more than that, because after their wintergreen success, Stephen and Reshman decided, you know, why should we stay in the lab all day, even though it smells nicer now? Because we have to sit there and watch these E. coli grow and grow and grow till they're ready to be experimented on. We could be outside playing Frisbee. So they decided to put a little trigger inside the E. coli. So when it's done growing, it switches from wintergreen to banana.
Banana?
Banana.
Yeah, the banana.
So banana.
You know, it smells like a banana milkshake. I mean, it smells more like a banana than a banana does.
So wintergreen means it's still growing, and banana means we're done.
Yep.
Wow, that's kind of awesome.
Awesome's a word. I want to discuss the awesome question here.
Okay.
Were you at all intrigued by the idea that as far as I know, and I'm maybe as far as you know, maybe as far as anybody know, in the history of the E. coli creature, there has never been an E. coli that smelled like wintergreen.
Yep.
You made it yourself.
Well, with the help of my team members, yes.
Did you feel a little spooked by the fact that you just created a life form new to creation?
I mean, at least we're doing something that's, you know, smells pleasant.
But you didn't feel like Dr. Frankenstein or God or...
Not at all.
So what does it feel like to make something that's never existed before?
Just feels like basic engineering.
Yeah, we're engineers. I would say we're engineers. We're building stuff. Building stuff.
Stuff.
Building stuff.
Building stuff. Building stuff. 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 And not just stuff. 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 But living stuff.
The road ahead is bright and clear because we're bioengineers. We'll fix
fix the problems of today by building stuff building with DNA.
We're splicing genes, we're building creatures,
adding extra useful features. No more waiting, Darwin's done. Swapping genes is much more fun.
Building stuff.
Building stuff. Building stuff.
The road ahead is bright and clear, because we're bioengineers.
I'd rather be swapping genes.
It's mankind's only fighting chance. Designer genes, not denim pants. We'll stop disease and greenhouse gases. Sequencing nucleic acids. Crack the code, we've seen the light.
We're building stuff,
we're building life.
We're building life.
The road ahead is bright and clear, because we're bioengineers.
We're building stuff.
Thanks to Josh Kurz and Shane Winter for that music. Radiolab will continue in a moment.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Annie E. Casey Foundation, helping disadvantaged children and their families connect to strong and supportive neighborhoods. On the web at aecf.org. Anne and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative, involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching, at breakthroughcollaborative.org. And the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide. On the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by Cozy Earth. When you think about summer comfort, words like breezy or soft maybe come to mind. With Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear, you'll get the comfort of home wherever you roam, allowing you to elevate your summer getaway no matter where or even if you're getting away. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulating and made from top-notch materials, including viscose from bamboo that can turn any living or sleeping space into a sanctuary of luxury and comfort. Their loungewear and pajamas offer you their signature level of comfort while maintaining an elegant fit so you can look cute and be comfy even if you're taking a long flight or car trip. Cozy Earth provided an exclusive offer for Radiolab listeners. Get 35% off site-wide when you use the code RADIOLAB at www.cozyearth.com. That's 35% off at cozyearth.com, code RADIOLAB. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth.